It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
That one is hit hard out to left. Chucky Robinson, goodbye. A two-run shot for Chucky Robinson. His first home run of the spring.
It's a first ball fastball. It's not inside quite enough, and Chucky obliterates it.
Line drive hit to deep left center field. This may go. Looking up, man, it's gone. Seiya Suzuki with his second home run of the spring. And the Cubs strike first. A 1-0 lead in the first over Kansas City. Here comes the 3-1. Drilled deep left center field. Forget about it. Long gone. Say a crushing one. His second home run of the afternoon. And the Cubs extend the lead. It's now 7-3 over the Royals here in the fourth.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Oh, is this on? What are we doing? Good morning, Chicago. And to all our ships at sea. And by ships at sea, I mean you, the Chicagoan transplanted, displaced, who yearns for baseball conversation and now gets it on a Sunday morning. Every week from here till sometime in late August or early September, as Hit and Run is back here on 670 The Score. I am Matt Spiegel. Sean Sears is back with me. And let the record show that Sean chose to begin the baseball season on a Sunday with a Chucky Robinson highlight, ladies and gentlemen, and a Sammy Sosa diabolical laugh when asked about steroids by our friend Lou Canellis yesterday morning, or Friday morning, I should say. Yeah, Sammy shocked to be asked about steroids. Unbelievable. What a world. Good morning, everybody. Look, things have happened. Something happened. And Hit and Run sometimes morphs. There have been times in my long tenure here as the host of Hit and Run, solo for a lot of years, some years with my guy Barry Rosner, some years with others. Well, who else have I hosted Hit and Run with? I mean, a lot of people. I mean, I was with David Schuster for a while. Zach Zabin and I have done lots of work together on a Hit and Run Sunday morning. There have been lots of folks. Connor McKnight worked with Barry Rosner. I mean, there's others. You're not here for me to run down the list of hosts for Hit and Run. I don't believe you are. George Offman and Jesse Rogers were the original hosts way, way back in the day. But now this show is mine, and I'm thrilled to have it and be here with you in our unique two-team baseball town. But you also might have noticed that yesterday afternoon, Justin Fields has been traded. So there have been times in my tenure as a host of Hit and Run where Hit and Run has turned into pick and roll. If there have been big basketball stories that demanded discussion, it had turned into dump and chase every once in a while during the Blackhawks heyday. And it has certainly turned into bump and run a little bit. So today will be a blend. Mark Grody's going to join us in about 40 minutes. And Grody's going to be on from noon until about 2:55 before Cubs baseball later on today. But Grody's going to join us and give some perspective on it. And along the way, the phone lines are open for you. For yes, baseball conversation, and I've got plenty. And also Justin Fields traded conversation. So it is a bit of a hybrid today, and that is cool by me. Think about
it. All right.
Yeah, McConaughey's psyched. I mean, think about it. After all this time, after all this coverage, it was apparently always fait accompli that the Bears were trading Justin Fields. There were some people out there who never believed it was actually going to happen. It did end up happening. A conditional sixth-round pick, which we've now learned is indeed a fourth-round pick if he plays more than 51% of the snaps. There are more details in Brad Biggs' column this morning in the Chicago Tribune. There are details in the ESPN piece that Courtney Cronin contributed to, and we can trace some of the history of this. I've got lots coming up for you on Craig Counsell and the White Sox as well, but let's trace some history here. Courtney Cronin says that originally the Bears had hoped to land a day two pick in the 2024 draft, coupled with a 2025 pick that had the potentials to escalate, kind of like the Sam Darnold trade the Jets made with the Panthers. Five teams, in addition to Pittsburgh, reached out to Chicago. The majority of those teams had envisioned the former first-round pick, Justin Fields, as a backup. And as of this late date yesterday, there was another offer with stronger draft capital, so maybe a fourth-round pick or a fifth, from a team that wanted Fields as a backup. But Ryan Poles chose to, quote, do right by Justin Fields, as he had mentioned at the Combine, and puts Justin in position to continue his development first as a backup to Russell Wilson, maybe eventually a starter in Pittsburgh, a team that was interested in him from the get-go. That's Mike Tomlin and the offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith. That's all from Courtney Cronin. Ryan Poles, in the statement itself, said that, quote, after multiple conversations over several weeks. I mean, Ryan Poles putting that out there. We've engaged in multiple trade conversations in recent weeks and believe trading Justin at this time to Pittsburgh is what is best for both Justin and the Bears. So there you go. Forget any sort of hints or tea leaf readings that said that the Bears had not been shopping Fields. Ian Rappaport flat out said it, but it was kind of conversational in the midst of a hit on NFL Network. The Bears tell you they have been shopping him. They were. It was time. And then the league has told you what they think about Justin Fields. And unfortunately, after 38 starts, no team out there believes he's a starter. Not one. Now, you can question as to why that is, and we can talk about why that is, but the truth is that is what the league has told you. By the way, an aside here from me, Matt Spiegel, as I host solo on Hit and Bump and Run, I am fully aware that as I talk football, I will be enraging some baseball fans that have been desperate and excited for Hit and Run. I am fully aware that when I talk baseball, I'll be enraging some football fans that are like, what are you doing talking baseball? Justin Fields just got traded. Such is our lot in life. So we'll be doing both and mixing in both. If you're ready for one, not the other, be patient. You'll get it soon. And as I mentioned, the phone lines are wide open for you at 312-644-6767. I want to go back to what I believed was happening at the beginning of last year's football season because I called it out at the time. And a lot of people disagreed with me, said I was crazy, whatever. It was very, very clear that the plan was, from the Bears' perspective, let's find out quickly if Justin Fields can take the leap and be the pocket quarterback we need him to be. So they trained him like crazy for it in the offseason. And you remember the game plan those first 2 weeks? And it led Danny Parkins, my partner, to say, this is coaching malpractice. It led a lot of people to say, what are they doing? But it was clear they were putting Justin into the deep end of the pool as a pocket passer. Like, all right, you got it? You any good? Can you do it? And the answer was kind of no. What it really was, hey, this is too fast. Come on, maybe it's coaching that's in my head. There's too much going on here. And I don't know that it was necessarily fair to Justin Fields, but the league isn't fair. Football isn't fair. And the reason they did that, because they had two first-round picks in their back pocket for this quarterback-heavy draft. Everybody knew this was the Caleb Williams draft and that this was also a draft where there were others. And it's turned out that it's Drake May and it's Jaden Daniels and it's Bo Nix and it's Michael Penix and it's J.J. McCarthy. And anyway, the Bears knew they were going to have two firsts. Maybe they could trade up for Caleb, or maybe they would get another new quarterback, a different new quarterback, and reset the clock. And oh, by the way, if Justin didn't work out as a pocket passer, then maybe they'd lose some games a little bit. And that's okay. I'm not saying it was an overt double tank, but the downside of Justin not making the leap was getting some tank wins in a year where you had two first-round picks. Hey, if he did make the leap, if he was great as a pocket passer, then boom, then you've got your guy and you invest in your guy. Now, was it fair? No, not necessarily. But here's what I said at the time, and I'll say now, the fact that Justin responded to it so poorly from a playing perspective, that his play, it was too much and he was overwhelmed and he said so, and they had to dial it back and go to more designed runs and go to more, you know, cut the field in half stuff that we've seen before. The fact that they had to do that is in itself a bad sign. It was in and of itself a bad sign. So there was that. And then the last seven games of the year, man, that was as good a testing ground as Justin has gotten. The last seven games, he had DJ Moore. He had an established offensive line. He had a defense that was playing its butt off. And in those last seven games, was he good enough? No. So it's too bad, but the truth was there that he just wasn't good enough as an NFL pocket passer that you must be. Okay? You have to have that in your bag. The quick game, hitting the layups, reading your progressions, especially in the fourth quarter when teams know if you're, especially if you're trying to come back and you got to go back and pass, teams have to know that you can do that. They have to trust and believe that you can do that. Yes, there can be plays you make with your feet like we saw Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl, but that only comes when the league and the defense respects you as a pocket passer. Then those openings are possible. I said that exact thing to Matt Eberflus about 3 weeks ago. And he said, you're absolutely right. That the league has to respect you as a pocket passer, and then maybe the running lanes are open. The league does not respect Justin Fields as a pocket passer. That's why nobody wants to have him start as of right now, and that's why you're only able to get a conditional sixth, or maybe you could have gotten a fifth or even a fourth from somebody else, but nobody was going to make him a starter. Nobody. That's just the way of the universe right now. So, look, we don't know if Caleb's going to be a much better pocket passer. I think he is. A lot of people think he is. But it's worth moving on and taking a shot at the next guy if after 38 starts, you're not sure about your guy. Get me? You're not sure after 38 starts? Then you can't do what the timeline mandates that you do. You can't give him a new big contract. You can't pay him. Because if you pay decent or you pay even just good the way that great quarterbacks are paid, you are screwed from a salary cap perspective and a team building perspective. You are screwed. So it's clear this entire offseason, the Bears have had this plan. They're going to have a new quarterback on a rookie contract. And so they go out and they spend on all these different things, on defense. So they'd make a trade for Keenan Allen to set it up as best as possible for year one. And if you're saying, man, they did Justin Fields dirty, that's the NFL. They got to make a decision on you fast. Most times, a young quarterback just runs out of time. And that's what happened here. He ran out of time. Will he make a leap later on in his career and have some kind of Geno Smith-esque second chapter if the circumstances provide for it? Possibly. But man, he ran out of time here. All right, we are going to do a ton of Cubs and Craig Counsell. I've got some big picture stuff I want to talk about. But I told you the phone lines are open, and we will hear from you now. This is James in Fort Lauderdale on 670 The Score. It's hit and run, but it's bump and run. So it goes. What's up, James?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks.
We've heard three of the five people interviewed that are going to be in the room to make this pick. Foles and the GM,
yeah,
and the coach. We've heard them all interviewed. The other two people that are going to be in the room are George McCaskey and Tanisha Wade. Tanisha Wade was a big part of picking Justin Fields.
Why do you say
I
that?
Would like to,
no, Tanisha Wade was on the coaching search
was in
committee.
The room.
Okay, all right, James, that doesn't matter, and that seems headed towards a needlessly racial perspective. This is Carl in the South Side on 670 The Score. Hey, Carl.
Hey, how you doing now?
I'm great.
Yeah, I got my heart broke. I'm really disappointed. I know everyone was saying, but I just didn't. Hey, I didn't buy in, and a lot of fans here didn't buy into. Well, being sold, they were, oh, we gotta take this pick. I mean, it's the first time that I've known that a lot of Chicago fans weren't buying that storyline. Justin Fields, I had said weeks ago we lost leverage because we never said there were no. We believe in Fields.
Hey, Carl, I understand your heart's broken, and I hear you, man. I don't think they lost leverage because they never said we believe in Fields. I think they lost leverage because nobody around the league wants to make him a starter. Nobody. Because they see what a lot of people see about Justin, which is that he is an electric athlete as a runner, that he is a really intriguing quarterback prospect, but it's 3 years in and there's not enough pocket passing. There's just not. Dan is in Racine on 670 The Score. Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I think the whole thing is going to explode with Justin, what's happening with him. This other guy has got a bad personality to get along with people. Now, when he played at USC,
yeah,
if you look at his background with what's his name, Williams, whatever the hell his name.
All right, so you don't know his name. Dan, I'm sorry. Thank you for the call. You don't know his name, but you're sure he's got a bad background and he can't get along with his teammates, even though that we have not heard one iota of him not getting along with his teammates. Not one iota. You've heard stuff about him having a sense of entitlement, as young, empowered players are progressively more so these days. We've heard about his father saying some things that were problematic. We've heard about some other things, but not one drop of him being bad with his teammate. This is John in Naperville on 670 The Score. Hey, John.
Speaks, what's up?
Hey.
How you doing this morning?
I'm delightful.
Sorry if you hear my son in the background. He's excited this morning. Wanted to weigh in on, one, the media totally ripping you guys for being a little bit, harsh on Fields. Let me tell you something. I'm a diehard Packer fan living in Chicago,
mm-hmm,
and I desperately wanted them to keep Justin Fields because he never beat the Packers. The same way I felt when they extended Jay Cutler, I rejoiced. Bears fans, like, it's amazing that you're going to get Caleb Williams. That's the best thing for your team. As a Packer fan, I didn't want them to get Caleb Williams. I wanted them to keep Justin Fields, so be happy about that. And then I'll blend, I know it's bump and run, I'm going to blend a little baseball with football. So,
do it, John. Do it.
Paul C. Podesta, who is the character of Jonah Hill is based on in,
yeah,
the movie Moneyball. They had a 20-year reunion with Michael Lewis, who wrote the book and everything, and he was recently with the Cleveland Browns, and they asked him, hey, is analytics going to work in football? He goes, well, obviously I can't give you away our special sauce or some of our proprietary information. He goes, but I will tell you this. You cannot win in the NFL without a top 10 quarterback. It doesn't matter what else you do. You need a legit and elite quarterback to win in this league. Justin Fields wasn't that. And so if you're a Bears fan, this is a great thing that you get another shot at Justin Fields. I know you're QB starved. And trust me, as a Packer fan, I am so fortunate. It's an embarrassment of riches to get two Hall of Fame quarterbacks back-to-back and a third one with a lot of pretty great upside.
A lot of promise. But you got to keep trying, John. You got to keep trying to find that great quarterback. You really, really do. And there are massive advantages to team building if you can find one as a rookie or a second-year guy. Look what the Texans just went out and did. They paid Daniil Hunter a crazy amount of money to be a pass rusher because they've got a quarterback on a rookie deal. This is how the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. This is how the Niners went to the Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick. Rookie deals. It matters. And now the Bears are loaded at a lot of other positions with Caleb coming in. That's the thing. Like, there's going to be a lot of ugliness, and I know there already is, and I really try not to pay attention to it. You're going to get a lot of people who were all in on Justin who are now going to pivot to something else and probably stay toxic in some way. One guy tweeted at me last night and said, "You guys drove Justin out of town." It's like, what are we doing? You know, and so, man, there are going to be other people who spike the ball and take unseemly victory laps. See you tomorrow, 2 o'clock, on Parkins at Spiegel. But anyway, no, I mean, like, all over the place, there's going to be people taking victory laps. Told you, whatever. This is a great, great moment to be a Bears fan if you can strip things away and say, oh, generational quarterback talent coming into all this other stuff, this could be really, really great. It could be like never before. You know, all that stuff. So just enjoy. See if you can find a way to enjoy. I'm going to see if I can find a way to enjoy. It is Bump and Run, now morphing back to Hit and Run. I've got a big picture Craig Council thought I've been wanting to talk about for days and days. And damn it, Hit and Run is the place to do it. Mark Grody at 9:45. But Craig Council, as a throwback hire, is next on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
Is your role with the Cubs exactly the same as it was with the Brewers, or is it more than just managing this team? Do you have a say in what goes on in terms of roster alignment?
Well, I think the manager's job, you know, it should be a partner with the general manager, and so with Jed and with Carter and helping. And, you know, I think where it's different is I'm a fresh set of eyes for them. That's where it's different. And you can be a big help being a fresh set of eyes. So, or you can be a pain. I'm not sure.
But it's okay to be a pain every once in a while.
But that's good too, right? Yeah. So you know, you try to do a little bit of both, and you try to like use being new to your advantage in that case.
That is Craig Council with MLB Network. Greg Amsinger and the MLB Network guys going around from camp to camp. Council as the new set of eyes. He has talked about looking at things with a new lens. 1 week ago, I was there in camp, spent 4 days in Mesa, tremendous experience, baseball immersion. So for your boy in the middle of March, oh, God, it was freaking blissful, people. It was blissful for the most part. But anyway, I got a chance to talk to Craig a couple of times, got a chance to talk to a lot of players, a lot of media around about what they had been seeing, and watched three games. Did one game on the radio, but got to watch three games, and like really also just kind of walk around the backfields in Mesa, which was an incredible experience. Just really to see a couple of things. One is what has come to fruition, Theo Epstein's vision of what that place could be. It's been a decade. It's been 10 years. And I was out there the very first year that it debuted. Me and Dan McNeil went out there to do some shows. And maybe you remember that's when Mac asked Theo to please bring Javi Baez up at some point because the fans need a cookie. And Theo said, "I'm not looking to give you a cookie. I'm looking to give you the whole meal at the table." And a couple years later, it's what you got. But anyway, the vision of what that place could be and how it was designed and how everything was thought out, it's really beautiful, and it's absolutely come to fruition, and that place functions incredibly well for what an organization needs. But watching Craig Council go around and teach with his glove on, working at this little half field they have, working with infielders. Saw him one day working with Chase Strumpf in the morning. I was like, who is that? Is that Shaw at second base? No. Oh, that's Strumpf. Okay. So he was working with Strumpf that morning, and he was very, very plugged in, connected, directly working with him on drills. And I realized something, which I then talked later to Ron Coomer about. Because Strumpf ended up playing the back half of the game that day at second base. The next day, he started at second base. And Craig was clearly working with him on stuff that he wanted to see him implement in the field. And so he could watch him and learn as much as possible, right? And we'd heard different things along the way from Jed Hoyer in a great article by Kenny Rosenthal. Jed Hoyer talked about how he respects Craig Counsell's opinion, you know, and that there are specific things that Craig has kind of recontextualized for him. Here's Jed the other day on the show, the podcast with John Heyman and with Joel Sherman talking about Counsell and what the dynamic is. So listen to this, and then I'll make my Counsell point after that.
You know, to me, there's a stability that a good manager brings that it's hard to calculate. You know, that the really great managers are never going to lose a clubhouse. They're going to help in the building of the team. They're going to be more of a partner than just managing the game. So I think there's a stability that there's a handful of guys in the game that I think can provide that is tremendously valuable. And I think that's what Craig provides. I mean, he thinks like a front office person. So he's going to be more involved in our team building stuff than a typical manager. But like I said, I think that with his mind, with the way he, you know, interacts with players, I think there's a stability that creates. It's hard to calculate in like how many wins is it worth, but I think over a 5-year period, I think it's going to provide just a foundation for the organization that is, you know, super beneficial.
Foundation for the organization, man, the way they talk about this and the way that I saw it implemented in my visit there, this is big picture stuff. You know what this is? This is manager as the intellectual head of the organization in some ways. This is manager as the guy setting the developmental plan for the young prospects as the head of the organization in some ways. Does he supersede Jed? Sometimes. Does he supersede Jason Kanzler, the director of development? I don't know. Sometimes, probably. Hell, if he's superseding Jed, if Jed's admitting that he's superseding him every once in a while, I think he supersedes Kanzler. I mean, Carter Hawkins? Yeah. I mean, if Craig has a thought that they have not considered or a disagreement to a topic they've brought up, they're going to listen to him. And in practice, literal practice, you see Craig teaching developmental stuff that then these young prospects will go back to their minor league seasons and take with them all year long. I want to be in there and find out about the developmental plans they set for these prospects after spring training. Is it Craig and Jed and Kanzler and Carter, whoever's in that room, is like, okay, what do we want Chase Strumpf to work on? Well, what did you see, Craig? And when Craig says, I think you should work on this and that, they'll be like, okay. And that's the manager at the top? Oh, my goodness. Doesn't happen anymore, people. It does not happen. I had the good fortune to sit for 3 games with Ron Coomer. Coomer came up in Minnesota, where Tom Kelly was the manager and the head of what the Twins did developmentally in the 1980s. And think about it. Think about how good those teams were and the template that was set. The GM was Terry Ryan. Really good GM. But you ask anybody who came up in that organization, who did you listen to for development? Who did you listen to for teaching? It was Tom Kelly. That was the boss. And any of you who followed the Twins, White Sox fans or otherwise, and saw the Twins for decades with Ron Gardenhire, who learned under Tom Kelly. Kelly, then Gardenhire. And they would always bring up these piranhas, right? They'd bring up a player, Nick Punto, ladies and gentlemen, whoever it was. They'd bring somebody up like, where the hell did this guy come from? How does he know to play that well and that clean and fit into what they do? Because it was an organizational cohesion. And look, you want to do that as a front office with your manager as a partner. That's the template over the last 15, 20 years. But every once in a while, you pay for a manager who's good enough to be at the top of that food chain. And that's the kind of throwback hire that Craig Counsell is. I found myself thinking about Earl Weaver and the Orioles. Earl Weaver, for anybody who doesn't know, came over from St. Louis, where he learned organizational and developmental stuff from George Kissel back in the 50s, okay? Then Weaver comes over to the Orioles. He set the template. He's the one who set the template for what the Orioles became. And, I mean, every once in a while, there's a guy who is that smart, that good of a teacher, but also likes being in uniform and being the manager. Remember, Jed said that there's a few guys, whether it's A.J. Hinch or Craig Breslow or Craig Counsell, former players that could do any job in an organization that they wanted to. Craig wants to be a manager, but he's more than a manager. He's in on every decision. He's in on every plan. And what I saw in action was a manager teaching development. And it's exciting because who else is better to do it? The guy who's right there, right in front of you. And then when you do get to the big leagues, you know that's the standard. That's the way you're supposed to play. And that's how it worked in Minnesota. That's how it worked in Baltimore for Earl Weaver. So in some ways, Craig Counsell is a throwback hire, and I think that's pretty cool and pretty exciting.
Do you think Counsell is a guy, is he setting the trend for the next manager, or is he like a dying breed? Like, is it going to be more Craig Counsell's just because it's so much harder now to be in charge of everything, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely, it's a dying breed in terms of front offices allowing someone to do it.
Right.
Like these days,
he's front, the guy, you right.
Front offices don't allow people to do it. Now, I don't know how it works for Bob Melvin. You know, I don't know how it works for Bruce Bochy, you know, like the other greatest managers in the game.
Right.
I'm sure that the GM in Cleveland would kowtow to Terry Francona every once in a while.
Yeah, sure.
We know for sure that Perry Minasian in Anaheim did not kowtow to Joe Maddon, and that turned ugly fast. Turned ugly very fast because it's very rare. So good on Jed for having the humility to realize that when you get a guy this good, let him cook. Let Craig cook. You know? And and every once in a while there's some, and Jed learned from Theo. Theo had the humility to realize we're broken. Our offense is broken. I think our pitching's broken too. Let me go out and get a new director of hitting. Let me go out and get a new director of pitching as things were starting to fade. You guys remember that? Humility. You got to have it. Just a little at the right times. This is humility from Jed, so I think it's very rare. I would, if things go well in these 5 years and Craig decides he wants to move on after that, I would expect the manager is somebody from the organization that learned under Craig, like Ron Gardenhire learned under Tom Kelly. 670 The Score is where you are. Mark Grody's going to join us in about 8-10 minutes and get back to the Justin Fields news as we toggle from hit and run to bump and run. Ben in Queens, you're on the show this morning. Ben, welcome in. How are you?
Spiggs, as a ship at sea, I had to send a distress signal with this huge football iceberg in my way, trying to get to a safe baseball port.
Yeah.
I feel compelled, I'm going to comment very briefly. March 16th will forever be known as Danny Parkins Day. Okay. the only thing is the analogy is a bit off. It's not Wagyu to skirt steak. Because what the NFL trademark said was it's more like Wagyu to chopped liver. You get a 6th-round pick next year? I mean, come on, can you give me a bag of balls as well? All right, but let that not derail our baseball conversation.
Thank you, Ben.
Okay, Craig Counsell. Okay, there's a lot of things that people have mentioned, like with the pitching. You know, here's the thing. Have I not been the most upbeat Cubs fan the past few years as far as like this whole process is gone.
Yeah, you have seen a light at the end of the tunnel, beginning with getting rid of the veterans.
Yes, okay, exactly. Thank you. Okay, so listen, with Counsell, okay, we all know about the pitching. Look, the Cubs have built depth. It's easy to say depth. It's very hard to build what they have. You're going to see 10 starting pitchers this year, and they're all going to be fairly decent. That's what it's going to take. With Counsell, okay, he develops rookies. You look last year, Terang and Weimer had the 4th and 5th most plate appearances. And Frelick ended up having a lot at the end of the year. None of them had a weighted runs created plus above 94 and OPS above 700. They won a division, and they were all above average baseball players. Okay, the lineups, we've already seen Seiya Suzuki, pitch putting him second because he's the best batter. Remember your universe where you couldn't imagine Cody Bellinger not hitting in the first inning? You get your wish. I get my Keith Law universe where we would get the second batter as the best batter. And you also saw this in the prospect game that Matt Shaw was going to bat second. He's been the best all overall. And you had Owen Casey at third. So you had that power. You're going to get that the first inning. You had Matt Shaw at second. Okay, but here's the thing. Craig Counsell has a way to take ne'er-do-well sluggers who have not had a lot of success or have had mediocre success and turn them into the career years. Okay, Eric Thames, out of baseball, KBO from 2014 to 2016. In 2017, he came to the Brewers, career year, 31 home runs, 125 weighted runs, creative plus, also a good year in 2019. Also, Jesus Aguilar came to the Brewers in 2017. He had 16 home runs. That was 47 combined home runs from that position. The next year, he had a career year, 35 home runs. Rowdy Tellez.
I knew it was coming.
Below average. Traded to Milwaukee, career year, 35 home runs. Okay, this is a slash line. 247, 317, 630. That was from last year. Now, who am I talking about? That was a Cub from last year. Who am I talking about? OPS a 947, WOBA 389. Who am I talking about?
I don't know.
Let me give you another clue. He has the 8th best home run expectancy in Major League Baseball for the last three years. Patrick Wisdom.
Oh.
Craig Counsell is going to get everything out of Patrick Wisdom. And before you talk about the defense, Patrick Wisdom used to be good on defense.
Ben, I got to cut you off. I got to cut you off. It's so much good stuff, Ben. It's so much good stuff. It's too much. The world doesn't deserve more of your good stuff. The world deserves me to cut you off and send it to break and then talk to Mark Grody. But my God, that was good stuff. All right, so Ben thinks that Patrick Wisdom's in for a big year to be used correctly by Craig Counsell. Oh, I love it. I love it, I love it, I love it. It's a lot of good stuff in there. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for listening. Ben was ready for the debut of Hit and Run. He had the notepad out. He had slash lines. He had it all. It's Matt Spiegler with you. Baseball, football, football, baseball, baseball, football. Top of the hour, we're going to reopen the phone lines on all things. Coming up next, though, our guy Mark Grody weighs in on the Danny Parkins Day festivities that were yesterday in advance of St. Patrick's Day. It's Matt Spiegler. It's Hit and Run on the Score.
This is not a question that I expected from you.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Hell of an athlete. Obviously, he can make tremendous plays with his feet, with his arm. Looks like he knows the game really well, and he's really good.
That is new Bears wide receiver Keenan Allen, who greeted the media yesterday in a whirlwind weekend. It's Matt Spiegel. This is Hit and Run. Back to baseball at the top of the hour, although we will mix it all together and open the phone lines at the top of the hour as well. But right now, it seems wise, seems prudent, seems fun, frankly, to check in with our guy Mark Grody, who joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Mark Grody covers the Bears like a blanket for 670 The Score. And Mark, I saw you yesterday at the boss's party, and I left before the trade went down. Were you still at the party when the trade went down, sir?
I was still at the party. It was great because I was in a cluster with most of the Score people at that time. We were watching the Irish dancers in Mitch's house, which was right before the bagpiper started blasting. Yeah.
I left before the bagpiper, which is one of my epitaphs. It's gonna be on my tombstone. Groats, Matt Spiegel. I left before the bagpiper.
Yeah, well, just so you know, they played that one song, the bagpipe song.
You mean Biko by Peter Gabriel? Is that what you mean?
Sure, yeah. That's the one. But yeah. it was amazing because we're sitting there watching that. We're all just having a good time. We're all in total Saturday mode. We're having fun. We're talking about our various plans for the night. Ray Diaz, the executive producer for the midday show of Bernstein and Holmes and of my podcast, The Daily Score, just started like acting. He was videoing the Irish dancers, and then all of a sudden his hands start shaking because he's getting alerts, and I'm like in La La Land, and Ray's like, they traded Fields. Like, he couldn't even get the words out of his mouth. And then there's Bernstein sitting on the couch, all calm with his son, Jason, and his wife, Beth. And we're all of a sudden, we're all, because this is 2024, Matt. Nobody really said it. We all just got buried into our phones.
Of course.
We're all texting. We're all making calls. Mitch and Ryan Porth are barking out orders. It was okay. We got this. Okay, Grody, we're gonna need you to go on at halftime with the Bulls. Grody, what are you doing tomorrow from noon to three? Uh-huh. Okay, we need to tell Spiegel that he's gonna have to quell some of the baseball talk. Sure. All right, you go there. You go there. Uh-huh. Ray, get out of here. You leave.
I like it. And also, put that corned beef away. We can't let it go to waste. Hold on. Is there any more smoked salmon? Where are the Frango mints? We've run out of Frango mints. Pat Hughes took all of the cookies.
I was really, really, this is how funny this day was, because the highlight of that party for me up until that point was standing in the vicinity of the outside the of the bathroom.
You and me,
with you and Pat Hughes, and Pat Hughes suggesting, Mark, why don't you interview the people as they come out of the bathroom? It was so funny.
It's unbelievably funny. And I was like, Mitch, you got a field mic here in the hallway? We need a field mic. And you're like, you want a person coming out of the bathroom? There's Grody with a field mic. So how'd it go? How'd it go?
Yeah. Right, how'd it go? What do we talk? How's the flow? What are you at, about a 7.5 or so?
Right. Listen, you've been doing this your whole life. I mean, where does this one rank?
From what I understand, you have gone every day of your life. That is a record. You are Cal Ripken every single day of your life.
Without fail. It's really impressive.
You've been in that bathroom every day of your life. That's consecutive days for how old are you? 52 years old?
Amazing. Except for that time there was a rain out in Baltimore, but that was, you know, weird circumstances. I don't know what that was about. All right, Grody. So anyway, so everybody finds out about the Bears news, and it's were there people taking victory laps? Did people take awkward, unseemly victory laps around Mitch's house?
No, there was none of that. Okay. I don't believe, because I'm trying to think of the people that were in my cluster then. It was Ray, it was Dan Bernstein. You apparently had left. I didn't know that you had left.
Thanks.
I just thought you were still kibitzing with Pat
at the
time.
Thanks.
So yeah.
Thanks
yeah,
for
no,
noticing.
We spent our time together, Matt.
We did.
But yeah, I don't think that party involved any like Justin Fields lovers at the time. So, but it really is like speaks. Think about it. Like, that's epic that a decent amount of the Score staff was assembled together at a social function on a Saturday when this deal went down, which is just epic and historic.
Yes.
It really is. There we are. The number one Chicago sports radio station gathered at the boss's house when the biggest news of the year goes down. It's crazy.
Well, we'll process this as a radio station, and you'll do your part today from noon to 2:55, and I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, Groats, it gets cleaner. The conversation gets cleaner, I would think, because the Bears will take a quarterback. And unless they find out something that terrifies them about Caleb Williams, it's probably him. The betting lines have it -5,000 right now that he is the number one pick. Hopefully this will become a cleaner conversation between now and the draft.
That's such a great word to use, Speaks, a cleaner conversation. I was using the word relief last night when I was on with Chuck Swirsky at halftime of the Bulls game, that you're right, all of this becomes clean. The Bears now, you know what we could focus on now is what's happening Wednesday when the Bears brass travels to Caleb Williams' pro day in L.A., and now we don't have to worry about talking about what's going on with Fields. You know, I think that for so many parts, like, this is a relief for Justin Fields. This is relief for the Bears. This is a relief, who cares about us? But in some regards, now we don't have to hit people over the head with the same thing every day and trying to do it in different. So I think for all parts, this works out. I understand that the haul is the wrong word to use, that they did not get good assets back in this trade. It was not worth, like, they should have gotten more. But in this case, like, honestly, I'm not mad, because they did do right by Justin Fields. I think that is something that we can all agree on that is good. And look, for what you're saying here, the relief of it, a clearer picture, this was just necessary for all of these parts to go on, because it was really difficult, Speaks, for the Bears to carry on with their business with this on their table. I saw it in Ryan Poles' eyes when I was at the Combine.
So how important, or why is it important, to do right by Justin Fields in terms of you know, what the rest of the league thinks, and in terms of that, why do you think it was so important? Because I agree that they did. It's a really good spot and opportunity for Justin. Frank.
Well, I think Speaks, I did not like Ryan Poles. Like, this is a weird thing to say, and you can relate to it because you do think on the human level a lot of times. But the fact that Ryan Poles said at the combine that several times, not necessarily even solicited, that we want to do right by Justin Fields is a marvelous human thing to do. So I feel conflicted even having an opinion about that. But this is something probably as time goes on that Ryan Poles is going to have to dismiss some of the personal side of the work that he does in those regards. Because since I always tell this story or always remind people of this, when they thought they had signed Larry Ogunjobi and then they had to pull it out from under him because he failed the physical, that brought Ryan Poles down. He was so upset about that. He made it clear when he spoke to us about it and that he really thinks like a player still in a lot of ways. So I think that maybe that hurt him a little bit in this case. But again, because the situation is so like, I don't know, toxic's not the right word, but you know, it's such a high level situation here with Caleb Williams being available. You probably had to do this sooner than you even wanted to, or get what you got as opposed to maybe what you should have got because of the player that is Justin Fields.
Groats, let's say it's a sixth in 2025, which is what this is conditionally, versus a fifth this year, or I mean, even or you know, or a fourth. I mean, the difference between that, I know it's a difference, but you are sitting so pretty with what you got from that trade of the number one pick to Carolina. It is absurd. It will go down as a legendary haul. And for anybody who doesn't know, in our next segment, I will recap it. I mean, hell, you used the fourth round pick that you got for trading Jalen Carter, trading down from 9 to 10. You used that pick that you got from the Eagles to get Keenan Allen. That's what they used. It's insane how pretty they're looking. All right, I'll let you go. What's coming up at noon? You.
I know. Yes, I will be coming up, and I will, as I know that you're going to be doing throughout the morning speaks, the phone lines will be wide open for 3 hours, basically from noon to 3. I know so far, I don't know how guest heavy we're going to be today, but David Haw will join. Oh, Haw. I didn't even mention Haw. Haw was in the room yesterday. So as we're putting this all thing together, and you know, you got Ryan Porth out here and Mitch barking out order, and as soon as Haw heard that I was going to be going on at noon, he's like, what time? He goes, 1 o'clock, Rhodey. I'll join you at 1 o'clock. I'm like, yes, sir. Book that man.
Check me out, man.
So the great David Haw, I am looking forward
that's
to
awesome.
Haw joining me at 1 o'clock, and Haw can stay on as long as he wants. We'll see. Haw might be the only guest. He's a good Haw.
All right, buddy. Well, come on for a couple minutes before noon. Let's transition a little if you're game.
We'll do it, man. Are you in the studio today, brother?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
I will be in the studio. Yeah. I was thinking about working in my boxers, but it feels like a big day, so
hey,
I'm going to make the move.
Switch the samples.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Come on, and I'll tell you which '80s movie I showed Ruben last night. So come on in. We'll talk in the last segment of the day. I look forward to it.
And I'll tell you what I told Ruben yesterday. So we'll talk about that too.
All right, good. Thank you, Mark Rhodey. Appreciate you. See you, buddy. Yeah, Ruben and David Haw with a long conversation yesterday. Yeah, you guys know Ruben. He's our call screener. He walked in and saw Mitch and said, "Hey, boss." It was awesome. It's awesome. And somebody asked him, "Oh, what's your work schedule?" And he said, "Every other Sunday." That is indeed his work schedule. So next week, Ruben will be back to do his job along with Sean Sears. It is hit and run. A little bit of bump and run. It's a big, big day. The phone lines are open. I want to talk to you. Yes, Justin Fields. Yes, Caleb Williams. Yes, Craig Counsell and the Cubs organizational approach. All of it mixed together here on Hit and Run and Bump and Run. And in fact, you're going to hear in a follow-up that I did with Counsell directly, he will tell you the three things that he values most in hitters. It was very instructive. We'll get there this hour with you on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
That one is hit hard out to left. Chucky Robinson, goodbye. A two-run shot for Chucky Robinson. His first home run of the spring.
As a first ball fastball, it's not inside quite enough, and Chucky obliterates it.
Line drive hit to deep left center field. This may go. Looking up, man, it's gone. Seiya Suzuki with his second home run of the spring. And the Cubs strike first, a 1-0 lead in the first over Kansas City. Here comes the 3-1. Drilled deep left center field. Forget about it. Long gone. Seiya crushing one. His second home run of the afternoon. And the Cubs extend the lead. It's now 7-3 over the Royals here in the fourth.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Oh, is this on? What are we doing? Good morning, Chicago. And to all our ships at sea. And by ships at sea, I mean you, the Chicagoan transplanted, displaced, who yearns for baseball conversation and now gets it on a Sunday morning. Every week from here till sometime in late August or early September, as Hit and Run is back here on 670 The Score. I am Matt Spiegel. Sean Sears is back with me. And let the record show that Sean chose to begin the baseball season on a Sunday with a Chucky Robinson highlight, ladies and gentlemen, and a Sammy Sosa diabolical laugh when asked about steroids by our friend Lou Canellis yesterday morning, or Friday morning, I should say. Yeah, Sammy shocked to be asked about steroids. Unbelievable. What a world. Good morning, everybody. Look, things have happened. Something happened. And Hit and Run sometimes morphs. There have been times in my long tenure here as the host of Hit and Run, solo for a lot of years, some years with my guy Barry Rosner, some years with others. Well, who else have I hosted Hit and Run with? I mean, a lot of people. I mean, I was with David Schuster for a while. Zach Zabin and I have done lots of work together on a Hit and Run Sunday morning. There have been lots of folks. Connor McKnight worked with Barry Rosner. I mean, there's others. You're not here for me to run down the list of hosts for Hit and Run. I don't believe you are. George Offman and Jesse Rogers were the original hosts way, way back in the day. But now this show is mine, and I am thrilled to have it and be here with you in our unique two-team baseball town. But you also might have noticed that yesterday afternoon, Justin Fields has been traded. So there have been times in my tenure as a host of Hit and Run where Hit and Run has turned into pick and roll. If there have been big basketball stories that demanded discussion, it had turned into dump and chase every once in a while during the Blackhawks heyday. And it has certainly turned into bump and run a little bit. So today will be a blend. Mark Grody's going to join us in about 40 minutes. And Grody's going to be on from noon until about 2:55 before Cubs baseball later on today. But Grody's going to join us and give some perspective on it. And along the way, the phone lines are open for you. For, yes, baseball conversation, and I've got plenty. and also Justin Fields traded conversation. So it is a bit of a hybrid today, and that is cool by me. Think about
it. All right.
Yeah, McConaughey's psyched. I mean, think about it. After all this time, after all this coverage, it was apparently always fait accompli that the Bears were trading Justin Fields. There were some people out there who never believed it was actually going to happen. It did end up happening. A conditional sixth-round pick, which we've now learned is indeed a fourth-round pick if he plays more than 51% of the snaps. There are more details in Brad Biggs' column this morning in the Chicago Tribune. There are details in the ESPN piece that Courtney Cronin contributed to, and we can trace some of the history of this. I've got lots coming up for you on Craig Counsell and the White Sox as well, but let's trace some history here. Courtney Cronin says that originally the Bears had hoped to land a day two pick in the 2024 draft, coupled with a 2025 pick that had the potentials to escalate, kind of like the Sam Darnold trade the Jets made with the Panthers. Five teams, in addition to Pittsburgh, reached out to Chicago. The majority of those teams had envisioned the former first-round pick, Justin Fields, as a backup. And as of this late date yesterday, there was another offer with stronger draft capital, so maybe a fourth-round pick or a fifth, from a team that wanted Fields as a backup. But Ryan Poles chose to, quote, do right by Justin Fields, as he had mentioned at the Combine, and puts Justin in position to continue his development first as a backup to Russell Wilson, maybe eventually a starter in Pittsburgh, a team that was interested in him from the get-go. That's Mike Tomlin and the offensive coordinator Arthur Smith. That's all from Courtney Cronin. Ryan Poles, in the statement itself, said that, quote, after multiple conversations over several weeks. I mean, Ryan Poles putting that out there. We've engaged in multiple trade conversations in recent weeks and believe trading Justin at this time to Pittsburgh is what is best for both Justin and the Bears. So there you go. Forget any sort of hints or tea leaf readings that said that the Bears had not been shopping Fields. Ian Rappaport flat out said it, but it was kind of conversational in the midst of a hit on NFL Network. The Bears tell you they have been shopping him. They were. It was time. And then the league has told you what they think about Justin Fields. And unfortunately, after 38 starts, no team out there believes he's a starter. Not one. Now, you can question as to why that is, and we can talk about why that is, but the truth is that is what the league has told you. By the way, an aside here from me, Matt Spiegel, as I host solo on Hit and Bump and Run, I am fully aware that as I talk football, I will be enraging some baseball fans that have been desperate and excited for Hit and Run. I am fully aware that when I talk baseball, I'll be enraging some football fans that are like, what are you doing talking baseball? Justin Fields just got traded. Such is our lot in life. So we'll be doing both and mixing in both. If you're ready for one, not the other, be patient. You'll get it soon. And as I mentioned, the phone lines are wide open for you at 312-644-6767. I want to go back to what I believed was happening at the beginning of last year's football season, because I called it out at the time. And a lot of people disagreed with me, said I was crazy, whatever. It was very, very clear that the plan was, from the Bears' perspective, let's find out quickly if Justin Fields can take the leap and be the pocket quarterback we need him to be. So they trained him like crazy for it in the offseason. And you remember the game plan those first 2 weeks? And it led Danny Parkins, my partner, to say, this is coaching malpractice. It led a lot of people to say, what are they doing? But it was clear they were putting Justin into the deep end of the pool as a pocket passer. Like, all right, you got it? You any good? Can you do it? And the answer was kind of no. What it really was, hey, this is too fast. Come on, maybe it's coaching that's in my head. There's too much going on here. And I don't know that it was necessarily fair to Justin Fields, but the league isn't fair. Football isn't fair. And the reason they did that was because they had two first-round picks in their back pocket for this quarterback-heavy draft. Everybody knew this was the Caleb Williams draft. and that this was also a draft where there were others, and it's turned out that it's Drake May, and it's Jaden Daniels, and it's Bo Nix, and it's Michael Penix, and it's J.J. McCarthy. And anyway, the Bears knew they were going to have two firsts. Maybe they could trade up for Caleb, or maybe they would get another new quarterback, a different new quarterback, and reset the clock. And oh, by the way, if Justin didn't work out as a pocket passer, then maybe they'd lose some games a little bit. And that's okay. I'm not saying it was an overt double tank, but the downside of Justin not making the leap was getting some tank wins in a year where you had two first-round picks. Hey, if he did make the leap, if he was great as a pocket passer, then boom, then you've got your guy and you invest in your guy. Now, was it fair? No, not necessarily. But here's what I said at the time, and I'll say now, the fact that Justin responded to it so poorly from a playing perspective, that his play, it was too much and he was overwhelmed and he said so, and they had to dial it back and go to more designed runs and go to more, you know, cut the field in half stuff that we've seen before. The fact that they had to do that is in itself a bad sign. It was in and of itself a bad sign. So there was that. And then the last seven games of the year, man, that was as good a testing ground as Justin has gotten. The last seven games, he had DJ Moore, he had an established offensive line, he had a defense that was playing its butt off. And in those last seven games, was he good enough? No. So it's too bad, but the truth was there that he just wasn't good enough as an NFL pocket passer that you must be. Okay? You have to have that in your bag. The quick game, hitting the layups, reading your progressions, especially in the fourth quarter when teams know, especially if you're trying to come back and you got to go back and pass, teams have to know that you can do that. They have to trust and believe that you can do that. Yes, there can be plays you make with your feet like we saw Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl, but that only comes when the league and the defense respects you as a pocket passer. Then those openings are possible. I said that exact thing to Matt Eberflus about 3 weeks ago, and he said, you're absolutely right, that the league has to respect you as a pocket passer, and then maybe the running lanes are open. The league does not respect Justin Fields as a pocket passer. That's why nobody wants to have him start as of right now, and that's why you're only able to get a conditional sixth, or maybe you could have gotten a fifth or even a fourth from somebody else, but nobody was going to make him a starter. Nobody. That's just the way of the universe right now. So, look, we don't know if Caleb's going to be a much better pocket passer. I think he is. A lot of people think he is. But it's worth moving on and taking a shot at the next guy if after 38 starts, you're not sure about your guy. Get me? You're not sure after 38 starts? Then you can't do what the timeline mandates that you do. You can't give him a new big contract. You can't pay him. Because if you pay decent or you pay even just good the way that great quarterbacks are paid, you are screwed from a salary cap perspective and a team building perspective. You are screwed. So it's clear this entire offseason, the Bears have had this plan. They're going to have a new quarterback on a rookie contract. And so they go out and they spend on all these different things, on defense. So they'd make a trade for Keenan Allen to set it up as best as possible for year one. And if you're saying, man, they did Justin Fields dirty, that's the NFL. They got to make a decision on you fast. Most times a young quarterback just runs out of time. And that's what happened here. He ran out of time. Will he make a leap later on in his career and have some kind of Geno Smith-esque second chapter if the circumstances provide for it? Possibly. But man, he ran out of time here. All right, we are going to do a ton of Cubs and Craig Counsell. I've got some big picture stuff I want to talk about. But I told you the phone lines are open, and we will hear from you now. This is James in Fort Lauderdale on 670 The Score. It's hit and run, but it's bump and run. So it goes. What's up, James?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks.
We've heard three of the five people interviewed that are going to be in the room to make this pick. Foles and the GM.
Yeah.
And the coach. We've heard them all interviewed. The other two people that are going to be in the room are George McCaskey and Tanisha Wade. Tanisha Wade was a big part of picking Justin Fields.
Why do you say that? No, Tanisha Wade was on the coaching search.
In the room.
Okay. All right, James, that doesn't matter. And that seems headed towards a needlessly racial perspective. This is Carl in the South Side on 670 The Score. Hey, Carl.
Hey, how you doing now?
I'm great.
Yeah, I got my heart broke. I'm really disappointed. I know everyone was saying, but I didn't buy in, and a lot of fans here didn't buy into, well, being sold. They were, oh, we got to take this pick. I mean, this is the first time that I've known a lot of Chicago fans weren't being, weren't buying that storyline. Justin Fields, I had said weeks ago, we lost leverage because we never said there were no. We believe in Fields.
Hey, Carl, I understand your heart's broken, and I hear you, man. I don't think they lost leverage because they never said we believe in Fields. I think they lost leverage because nobody around the league wants to make him a starter. Nobody. Because they see what a lot of people see about Justin, which is that he is an electric athlete as a runner, that he is a really intriguing quarterback prospect, but it's 3 years in and there's not enough pocket passing. There's just not. Dan is in Racine on 670 The Score. Hey, Dan.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. I think the whole thing is going to explode with Justin, what's happening with him. This other guy has got a bad personality to get along with people. Now, when he played at USC,
yeah.
If you look at his background with what's his name, Williams, whatever the hell his name.
All right, so you don't know his name. Dan, I'm sorry. Thank you for the call. You don't know his name, but you're sure he's got a bad background and he can't get along with his teammates, even though that we have not heard one iota of him not getting along with his teammates. Not one iota. You've heard stuff about him having a sense of entitlement, as young empowered players are progressively more so these days. We've heard about his father saying some things that were problematic. We've heard about some other things, but not one drop of him being bad with his teammate. This is John in Naperville on 670 The Score. Hey, John.
Speaks, what's up?
Hey.
How you doing this morning?
I'm delightful.
Sorry if you hear my son in the background. He's excited this morning. Wanted to weigh in on, one, the media totally ripping you guys for being a little bit, harsh on Fields. Let me tell you something. I'm a diehard Packer fan living in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I desperately wanted them to keep Justin Fields because he never beat the Packers. The same way I felt when they extended Jay Cutler, I rejoiced. Bears fans, like, it's amazing that you're going to get Caleb Williams. That's the best thing for your team. As a Packer fan, I didn't want them to get Caleb Williams. I wanted them to keep Justin Fields, so be happy about that. And then I'll blend, and I know it's bump and run, I'm going to blend a little baseball with football. So,
do it, John.
Paul,
do it.
Paul C. Bethesda, who is the character of Jonah Hill is based on in
yeah.
the movie Moneyball. They had a 20-year reunion with Michael Lewis, who wrote the book and everything, and he was recently with the Cleveland Browns, and they asked him, hey, is analytics going to work in football? He goes, well, obviously I can't give you away our special sauce or some of our proprietary information. He goes, but I will tell you this. You cannot win in the NFL without a top-10 quarterback. It doesn't matter what else you do. You need a legit and elite quarterback to win in this league. Justin Fields wasn't that. And so if you're a Bears fan, this is a great thing that you get another shot at Justin Fields. I know you're QB starved. And trust me, as a Packer fan, I am so fortunate. It's an embarrassment of riches to get two Hall of Fame quarterbacks back-to-back and a third one with a lot of pretty great.
Promise, but you got to keep trying, John. You got to keep trying to find that great quarterback. You really, really do. And there are massive advantages to team building if you can find one as a rookie or a second-year guy. Look what the Texans just went out and did. They paid Danielle Hunter a crazy amount of money to be a pass rusher because they've got a quarterback on a rookie deal. This is how the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. This is how the Niners went to the Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick. Rookie deals. It matters. And now the Bears are loaded at a lot of other positions with Caleb coming in. That's the thing. Like, there's going to be a lot of ugliness, and I know there already is, and I really try not to pay attention to it. You're going to get a lot of people who were all in on Justin who are now going to pivot to something else and probably stay toxic in some way. One guy tweeted at me last night and said, "You guys drove Justin out of town." It's like, what are we doing? You know, and so, man, there are going to be other people who spike the ball and take unseemly victory laps. See you tomorrow, 2 o'clock, on Pockets at Spiegel. But anyway, no, I mean, like, all over the place, there's going to be people taking victory laps. Told you, whatever. This is a great, great moment to be a Bears fan if you can strip things away and say, oh, generational quarterback talent coming into all this other stuff. This could be really, really great. It could be like never before, you know, all that stuff. So just enjoy. See if you can find a way to enjoy. I'm going to see if I can find a way to enjoy. It is Bump and Run, now morphing back to Hit and Run. I've got a big picture Craig Council thought I've been wanting to talk about for days and days. And damn it, Hit and Run is the place to do it. Mark Grody at 9:45. But Craig Council, as a throwback hire, is next on 670 The Score.
We're back with more Hit and Run.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball.
On 670 The Score.
No crying.
Is your role with the Cubs exactly the same as it was with the Brewers, or is it more than just managing this team? Do you have a say in what goes on in terms of roster alignment?
Well, I think the manager's job, you know, it should be a partner with the general manager and so with Jed and with Carter and helping. And, you know, I think where it's different is I'm a fresh set of eyes for them. That's where it's different. And you can be a big help being a fresh set of eyes. So, or you can be a pain. I'm not sure.
But it's okay to be a pain every once in a while.
But that's good too, right? Yeah. So you know, you try to do a little bit of both, and you try to like use being new to your advantage in that case.
That is Craig Council with MLB Network. Greg Amsinger and the MLB Network guys going around from camp to camp. Council as the new set of eyes. He has talked about looking at things with a new lens. 1 week ago, I was there in camp. Spent 4 days in Mesa. Tremendous experience. Baseball immersion. So for your boy in the middle of March, oh, God, it was freaking blissful, people. It was blissful for the most part. But anyway, I got a chance to talk to Craig a couple of times. Got a chance to talk to a lot of players, a lot of media around about what they had been seeing and watched three games. Did one game on the radio, but got to watch three games and like really also just kind of walk around the backfields in Mesa, which was an incredible experience. Just really to see a couple of things. One is what has come to fruition, Theo Epstein's vision of what that place could be. It's been a decade. It's been 10 years. And I was out there the very first year that it debuted. Me and Dan McNeil went out there to do some shows. And maybe you remember that's when Mac asked Theo to please bring Javi Baez up at some point because the fans need a cookie. And Theo said, "I'm not looking to give you a cookie. I'm looking to give you the whole meal at the table." And a couple years later, it's what you got. But anyway, the vision of what that place could be and how it was designed and how everything was thought out, it's really beautiful, and it's absolutely come to fruition, and that place functions incredibly well for what an organization needs. But watching Craig Council go around and teach with his glove on, working at this little half field they have, working with infielders. Saw him one day working with Chase Strumpf in the morning. I was like, who is that? Is that Shaw at second base? No. Oh, that's Strumpf. Okay. So he was working with Strumpf that morning, and he was very, very plugged in, connected, directly working with him on drills. And I realized something, which I then talked later to Ron Coomer about. because Strumpf ended up playing the back half of the game that day at second base. The next day, he started at second base, and Craig was clearly working with him on stuff that he wanted to see him implement in the field, and so he could watch him and learn as much as possible, right? And we'd heard different things along the way from Jed Hoyer in a great article by Kenny Rosenthal. Jed Hoyer talked about how he respects Craig Counsell's opinion, you know, and that there are specific things that Craig has kind of recontextualized for him. Here's Jed the other day on the show, the podcast with John Heyman and with Joel Sherman, talking about Counsell and what the dynamic is. So listen to this, and then I'll make my Counsell point after that.
You know, to me, there's a stability that a good manager brings that it's hard to calculate. You know, that the really great managers are never going to lose a clubhouse. They're going to help in the building of the team. They're going to be more of a partner than just managing the game. So I think there's a stability that there's a handful of guys in the game that I think can provide that is tremendously valuable. And I think that that's what Craig provides. I mean, he thinks like a front office person. So he's going to be more involved in our team building stuff than a typical manager. But like I said, I think that with his mind, with the way he interacts with players, I think there's a stability that creates. It's hard to calculate in like how many wins is it worth, but I think over a 5-year period, I think it's going to provide just a foundation for the organization that is, you know, super beneficial.
Foundation for the organization, man. The way they talk about this and the way that I saw it implemented in my visit there, this is big picture stuff. You know what this is? This is manager as the intellectual head of the organization in some ways. This is manager as the guy setting the developmental plan for the young prospects as the head of the organization in some ways. Does he supersede Jed? Sometimes. Does he supersede Jason Kanzler, the director of development? I don't know. Sometimes, probably. Hell, if he's superseding Jed, if Jed's admitting that he's superseding him every once in a while, I think he supersedes Kanzler. I mean, Carter Hawkins? Yeah. I mean, if Craig has a thought that they have not considered or a disagreement to a topic they've brought up, they're going to listen to him. And in practice, literal practice, you see Craig teaching developmental stuff that then these young prospects will go back to their minor league seasons and take with them all year long. I want to be in there and find out about the developmental plans they set for these prospects after spring training. Craig and Jed and Kanzler and Carter, whoever's in that room, is like, okay, what do we want Chase Strumpf to work on? Well, what did you see, Craig? And when Craig says, I think you should work on this and that, they'll be like, okay. And that's the manager at the top? Oh my goodness. Doesn't happen anymore, people. It does not happen. I had the good fortune to sit for 3 games with Ron Coomer. Coomer came up in Minnesota, where Tom Kelly was the manager and the head of what the Twins did developmentally in the 1980s. And think about it. Think about how good those teams were and the template that was set. The GM was Terry Ryan, really good GM. But you ask anybody who came up in that organization, who did you listen to for development? Who did you listen to for teaching? It was Tom Kelly. That was the boss. And any of you who followed the Twins, White Sox fans or otherwise, and saw the Twins for decades with Ron Gardenhire, who learned under Tom Kelly. Kelly, then Gardenhire. And they would always bring up these piranhas, right? They'd bring up a player, Nick Punto, ladies and gentlemen, whoever it was. They'd bring somebody up like, where the hell did this guy come from? How does he know to play that well and that clean and fit into what they do? Because it was an organizational cohesion. And look, you want to do that as a front office with your manager as a partner. That's the template over the last 15, 20 years. But every once in a while, you pay for a manager who's good enough to be at the top of that food chain. And that's the kind of throwback hire that Craig Counsell is. I found myself thinking about Earl Weaver and the Orioles Earl Weaver, for anybody who doesn't know, came over from St. Louis, where he learned organizational and developmental stuff from George Kissel back in the 50s, okay? Then Weaver comes over to the Orioles. He set the template. He's the one who set the template for what the Orioles became. And, I mean, every once in a while, there's a guy who is that smart, that good of a teacher, but also likes being in uniform and being the manager. Remember, Jed said that there's a few guys, whether it's A.J. Hinch or Craig Breslow or Craig Counsell, former players that could do any job in an organization that they wanted to. Craig wants to be a manager, but he's more than a manager. He's in on every decision. He's in on every plan. And what I saw in action was a manager teaching development. And it's exciting because who else is better to do it? The guy who's right there, right in front of you. And then when you do get to the big leagues, you know that's the standard. That's the way you're supposed to play. And that's how it worked in Minnesota. That's how it worked in Baltimore for Earl Weaver. So in some ways, Craig Counsell is a throwback hire, and I think that's pretty cool and pretty exciting.
Do you think Counsell is a guy, is he setting the trend for the next manager, or is he like a dying breed? Like, is it going to be more Craig Counsells just because it's so much harder now to be in charge of everything, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely, it's a dying breed in terms of front offices allowing someone to do it.
Right.
Like, these days,
front
offices don't allow people to do it. Now, I don't know how it works for Bob Melvin. You know, I don't know how it works for Bruce Bochy, you know, like the other greatest managers in the game.
Right.
I'm sure that the GM in Cleveland would kowtow to Terry Francona every once in a while.
Yeah, sure.
We know for sure that Perry Minasian in Anaheim did not kowtow to Joe Maddon, and that turned ugly fast. Turned ugly very fast because it's very rare. So good on Jed for having the humility to realize that when you get a guy this good, let him cook. Let Craig cook. You know? And and every once in a while there's some, and Jed learned from Theo. Theo had the humility to realize we're broken. Our offense is broken. I think our pitching's broken too. Let me go out and get a new director of hitting. Let me go out and get a new director of pitching as things were starting to fade. You guys remember that? Humility. You got to have it. Just a little at the right times. This is humility from Jed, so I think it's very rare. I would, if things go well in these 5 years and Craig decides he wants to move on after that, I would expect the manager is somebody from the organization that learned under Craig, like Ron Gardenhire learned under Tom Kelly. 670 The Score is where you are. Mark Grody's going to join us in about 8-10 minutes and get back to the Justin Fields news as we toggle from hit and run to bump and run. Ben in Queens, you're on the show this morning. Ben, welcome in. How are you?
Biggs, as a ship at sea, I had to send a distress signal with this huge football iceberg in my way, trying to get to a safe baseball port.
Yeah.
I feel compelled, I'm going to comment very briefly. March 16th will forever be known as Danny Parkins Day. Okay. the only thing is the analogy is a bit off. It's not Wagyu to skirt steak. Because what the NFL trademark said was it's more like Wagyu to chopped liver. You get a 6th-round pick next year. I mean, come on, can you give me a bag of balls as well? All right, but let that not derail our baseball conversation.
Thank you, Ben.
Okay, Craig Counsell. Okay, there's a lot of things that people have mentioned, like with the pitching. You know, here's the thing. Have I not been the most upbeat Cubs fan the past few years as far as like this whole process is gone?
Yeah, you have seen a light at the end of the tunnel, beginning with getting rid of the veterans.
Yes, okay, exactly. Thank you. Okay, so listen, with Counsell, okay, we all know about the pitching. Look, the Cubs have built depth. It's easy to say depth. It's very hard to build what they have. You're going to see 10 starting pitchers this year, and they're all going to be fairly decent. That's what it's going to take. With Counsell, okay, he develops rookies. If you look last year, Terang and Weimer had the 4th and 5th most plate appearances. And Frelick ended up having a lot at the end of the year. None of them had a weighted runs created plus above 94 and OPS above 700. They won a division, and they were all above average baseball players. Okay, the lineups, we've already seen Seiya Suzuki, pitch putting him second because he's the best batter. Remember your universe where you couldn't imagine Cody Bellinger not hitting in the first inning? You get your wish. I get my Keith Law Universal. We would get the second batter as the best batter. And you also saw this in the prospect game that Matt Shaw was going to bat second. He's been the best all overall. And you had Owen Casey at third. So you had that power. You're going to get that the first inning. You had Matt Shaw at second. Okay, but here's the thing. Craig Counsell has a way to take ne'er-do-well sluggers who have not had a lot of success or have had mediocre success and turn them into have them the career years. Okay, Eric Thames, out of baseball, KBO from 2014 to 2016. In 2017, he came to the Brewers, career year, 31 home runs, 125 weighted runs, created plus, also a good year in 2019. Also, Jesus Aguilar came to the Brewers in 2017. He had 16 home runs. That was 47 combined home runs from that position. The next year, he had a career year, 35 home runs. Rowdy Tellez.
I knew it was coming.
Below average. Traded to Milwaukee, career year, 35 home runs. Okay, this is a slash line. 247, 317, 630. That was from last year. Now, who am I talking about? That was a Cub from last year. Who am I talking about? OPS a 947, WOBA 389. Who am I talking about?
I don't know.
Let me give you another clue. He has the eighth best home run expectancy in Major League Baseball for the last three years.
I don't know.
Patrick Wisdom.
Oh.
Craig Counsell is going to get everything out of Patrick Wisdom. And before you talk about the defense, Patrick Wisdom used to be good on defense.
I got to cut you off. It's so much good stuff, Ben. It's so much good stuff. It's too much. The world doesn't deserve more of your good stuff. The world deserves me to cut you off and send it to break and then talk to Mark Grody. But my God, that was good stuff. All right, so Ben thinks that Patrick Wisdom's in for a big year to be used correctly by Craig Counsell. I love it. I love it. It's a lot of good stuff in there. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for listening. Ben was ready for the debut of Hit and Run. He had the notepad out. He had slash lines. He had it all. It's Matt Spiegel here with you. Baseball, football, football, baseball, baseball, football. Top of the hour, we're going to reopen the phone lines on all things. Coming up next, though, our guy Mark Grody weighs in on the Danny Parkins Day festivities that were yesterday in advance of St. Patrick's Day. It's Matt Spiegel. It's Hit and Run on the Score.
This is not a question that I expected from you.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Hell of an athlete. Obviously, he can make tremendous plays with his feet, with his arm. He looks like he knows the game really well, and he's really good.
That is new Bears wide receiver Keenan Allen, who greeted the media yesterday in a whirlwind weekend. It's Matt Spiegel. This is Hit and Run. Back to baseball at the top of the hour, although we will mix it all together and open the phone lines at the top of the hour as well. But right now, it seems wise, seems prudent, seems fun, frankly, to check in with our guy Mark Grody, who joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Mark Grody covers the Bears like a blanket for 670 The Score. And Mark, I saw you yesterday at the boss's party, and I left before the trade went down. Were you still at the party when the trade went down, sir?
I was still at the party. It was great because I was in a cluster with most of the Score people at that time. We were watching the Irish dancers in Mitch's house, which was right before the bagpiper started blasting.
Yeah. I left before the bagpiper, which is one of my epitaphs. It's gonna be on my tombstone. Groats, Matt Spiegel. I left before the bagpiper.
Yeah, well, just so you know, they played that one song, the bagpipe song.
You mean Biko by Peter Gabriel? Is that what you mean?
Sure, yeah. That's the one. But yeah. it was amazing because we're sitting there watching that. We're all just having a good time. We're all in total Saturday mode. We're having fun. We're talking about our various plans for the night. Ray Diaz, the executive producer for the midday show of Bernstein and Holmes and of my podcast, The Daily Score, just started like acting. He was videoing the Irish dancers, and then all of a sudden his hands start shaking because he's getting alerts, and I'm like in La La Land, and Ray's like, they traded Fields. Like, he couldn't even get the words out of his mouth. And then there's Bernstein sitting on the couch, all calm with his son, Jason, and his wife, Beth. And we're all of a sudden, we're all, because this is 2024, Matt. nobody really said it. We all just got buried into our phones.
Of course.
We're all texting. We're all making calls. Mitch and Ryan Porth are barking out orders. It was okay. We got this. Okay, Grody, we're gonna need you to go on at halftime with the Bulls. Grody, what are you doing tomorrow from noon to three?
Uh-huh.
Okay, we need to tell Spiegel that he's gonna have to quell some of the baseball talk.
Sure.
All right, you go there. You go there.
Uh-huh.
Ray, get out of here. You leave.
I like it. And also, put that corned beef away. We can't let it go to waste. Hold on. Is there any more smoked salmon? Where are the Frango mints? We've run out of Frango mints. Pat Hughes took all of the cookies.
I was really, really, this is how funny this day was, because the highlight of that party for me up
yes.
until that point
yes.
was standing in the vicinity of the outside
the bathroom.
Of the bathroom.
You and me,
with
babe.
You and Pat Hughes, and Pat Hughes suggesting, Mark, why don't you interview the people as they come out of the bathroom? It was so funny.
It's Pat unbelievably and funny. And I was like, Mitch, you got a field mic? Here in the hallway, we need a field mic.
Oh,
and you're like, you want a person coming out of the bathroom? There's Grody with a field mic. So, how'd it go? How'd it go?
Yeah, right. How'd it go? What do we talk? How's the flow? What do you had about a 7.5 or so?
Right. Listen, you've been doing this your whole life. I mean, where does this one rank?
From what I understand, you have gone every day of your life. That is a record. You are Cal Ripken every single day of your life.
Without
you
fail, it's really impressive.
You've been in that bathroom every day of your life. That's consecutive days for how old are you? 52 years
old? Amazing. Except for that time. Except for that time there was a rain out in Baltimore, but that was, you know, weird circumstances. I don't know what that was about. All right,
yeah,
Brody.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So everybody finds out about the Bears news, and it's were there people taking victory laps? Did people take awkward, unseemly victory laps around Mitch's house?
No, there was none of that. Okay. I don't believe, because I'm trying to think of the people that were in my cluster then. It was Ray. It was Dan Bernstein. You apparently had left. I didn't know that you had left.
Thanks.
I just thought you were still kibitzing with Pat
at
the time.
Thanks.
So yeah.
Thanks
yeah,
for
no,
noticing.
We spent our time together, Matt.
We did.
But yeah, I don't think that party involved any like Justin Fields lovers at the time. So, but it really is like speaks. Think about it. Like, that's epic that a decent amount of the Score staff was assembled together
yes.
at a social function on a Saturday when this deal went down, which is just epic and historic.
Yes.
It really is. There we are. The number one Chicago sports radio station gathered at the boss's house when the biggest news of the year goes down. It's crazy.
Well, we'll process this as a radio station, and you'll do your part today from noon to 2:55, and I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, Groats, it gets cleaner. The conversation gets cleaner, I would think, because the Bears will take a quarterback. And unless they find out something that terrifies them about Caleb Williams, it's probably him. The betting lines have it -5,000 right now that he is the number one pick. Hopefully this will become a cleaner conversation between now and the draft.
That's such a great word to use, Speaks, a cleaner conversation. I was using the word relief last night when I was on with Chuck Swirsky at halftime of the Bulls game, that you're right, all of this becomes clean. The Bears now, you know what we could focus on now is what's happening Wednesday when the Bears brass travels to Caleb Williams' pro day in L.A., and now we don't have to worry about talking about what's going on with Fields. You know, I think that for so many parts, like, this is a relief for Justin Fields. This is a relief for the Bears. This is a relief. Who cares about us? But in some regards, now we don't have to hit people over the head with the same thing every day and trying to do it in different. So I think for all parts, this works out. I understand that the haul is the wrong word to use, that they got. They did not get good assets back in this trade. It was not worth, like, they should have gotten more. But in this case, like, honestly, I'm not mad, because they did do right by Justin Fields. I think that is something that we can all agree on that is good. And look, for what you're saying here, the relief of it, a clearer picture, this was just necessary for all of these parts to go on, because it was really difficult, Spiegs, for the Bears to carry on with their business with this on their table. I saw it in Ryan Poles' eyes when I was at the Combine.
So how important, or why is it important, to do right by Justin Fields in terms of you know, what the rest of the league thinks, and in terms of that, why do you think it was so important? Because I agree that they did. It's a really good spot and opportunity for Justin. Frank.
Well, I think Speaks, I did not like Ryan Poles. Like, this is a weird thing to say, and you can relate to it because you do think on the human level a lot of times. But the fact that Ryan Poles said at the combine that several times, not necessarily even solicited, that we want to do right by Justin Fields is a marvelous human thing to do. So I feel conflicted even having an opinion about that. But this is something probably as time goes on that Ryan Poles is going to have to dismiss some of the personal side of the work that he does in those regards. Because since that, I always tell this story or always remind people of this, when they thought they had signed Larry Ogunjobi and then they had to pull it out from under him because he failed the physical, that brought Ryan Poles down. He was so upset about that. He made it clear when he spoke to us about it, and that he really thinks like a player still in a lot of ways. So I think that maybe that hurt him a little bit in this case. But again, because the situation is so like, I don't know, toxic's not the right word, but you know, it's such a high level situation here with Caleb Williams being available. You probably had to do this sooner than you even wanted to, or get what you got as opposed to maybe what you should have got because of the player that is Justin Fields.
Groats, let's say it's a sixth in 2025, which is what this is conditionally, versus a fifth this year, or a fourth. I mean, the difference between that, I know it's a difference, but you are sitting so pretty with what you got from that trade of the number one pick to Carolina. It is absurd. It will go down as a legendary haul. And for anybody who doesn't know, in our next segment, I will recap it. I mean, hell, you used the fourth round pick that you got for trading Jalen Carter, trading down from 9 to 10. You used that pick that you got from the Eagles to get Keenan Allen. That's what they used. It's insane how pretty they're looking. All right, I'll let you go. What's coming up at noon? You.
I know. Yes, I will be coming up, and I will, as I know that you're going to be doing throughout the morning, Speaks, the phone lines will be wide open for 3 hours, basically from noon to 3. I know so far, I don't know how guest heavy we're going to be today, but David Haw will join. Oh, Haw. I didn't even mention Haw. Haw was in the room yesterday. So as we're putting this whole thing together, and you know, you got Ryan Porth out here and Mitch barking out order, and as soon as Haw heard that I was going to be going on at noon, he's like, what time? He goes, 1 o'clock, Rody. I'll join you at 1 o'clock. I'm like, yes, sir. Book that man.
Check me out, man.
So the great David Haw, I am looking forward Haw joining me at 1 o'clock, and Haw can stay on as long as he wants. We'll see. Haw might be the only guest. He's a good Haw.
All right, buddy. Well, come on for a couple minutes before noon. Let's transition a little if you're game.
We'll do it, man. Are you in the studio today, brother?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
I will be in the studio. Yeah. I was thinking about working in my boxers, but it feels like a big day, so
hey,
I'm going to make the move.
Switch the samples.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Come on, and I'll tell you which 80s movie I showed Ruben last night. So come on in. We'll talk in the last segment of the day. I look forward to it.
And I'll tell you what I told Ruben yesterday, so we'll talk about that, too.
All right, good. Thank you, Mark Grody. Appreciate you. See you, buddy. Yeah, Ruben and David Haw with a long conversation yesterday. Yeah, you guys know Ruben. He's our call screener. He walked in and saw Mitch and said, "Hey, boss." It was awesome. Awesome. And somebody asked him, what's your work schedule? And he said, every other Sunday. That is indeed his work schedule. So next week, Ruben will be back to do his job along with Sean Sears. It is hit and run. A little bit of bump and run. It's a big, big day. The phone lines are open. I want to talk to you. Yes, Justin Fields. Yes, Caleb Williams. Yes, Craig Counsell and the Cubs organizational approach. All of it mixed together here on hit and run and bump and run. And in fact, you're going to hear in a follow-up that I did with Counsell directly, he will tell you the three things that he values most in hitters. It was very instructive. We'll get there this hour with you on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.